And a good bit of the time was spent trying to establish the context of what we're going to study in this chapter, because the context is absolutely essential in arriving at sound Bible doctrine as is given here in this passage. I mentioned on Wednesday night that there are many different false teachings that have derived from misapplying what you have here in Mark chapter 13. And so I took some time to try to show the people who were with us that the context of what you have here is not the church age, which is what we're in now. The context is the tribulation, which occurs right after the church age. Whenever you have the rapture of the church, at whatever point that takes place, then we'll begin the tribulation, which will last for about 7 years. And I say about because of something that the Bible teaches. But the first 3.5 years of that time is not going to be nearly as bad as the last 3.5 years of that time. The last 3.5 years are referred to by most Bible teachers as the Great Tribulation. It's all the tribulation, but the last 3.5 years, things are going to ramp up and go to a whole other level. And things are going to get really, really bad. So bad that Jesus says there in verse 19 of this chapter, "In those days shall be affliction, such as was not from the beginning of the creation which God created unto this time, neither shall be." And that's one of the verses, by the way, I used on Wednesday night to show the context. This chapter is clearly talking about a period of time which is different from any other period of time in the past and will be different from any period of time beyond that point. And clearly that is talking about the tribulation period, because that will be the worst time in the history of the entire world from beginning to end. So that's the context, and you need to remember that, because if you don't, you're going to take stuff in here that applies to tribulation and try to apply it to church age, and you're going to wind up teaching some stuff that's just not right. And that's what's going on in a lot of different places. One thing I mentioned is that people are preaching even now that signs, which you read about in this particular chapter, are things that we need to be looking for right now in advance of the rapture of the church. But as I mentioned Wednesday night, there are no other signs that have to be fulfilled for Jesus to come back for the church. This is all stuff that has to do with the tribulation and the second advent, or the second coming of Christ back to this earth. But as far as the rapture, we don't need to be looking for signs. We need to be looking for Jesus. He could come in any moment. There's nothing else that needs to be fulfilled. But there are things that will take place during the tribulation that will kind of give the people here at that time a heads up about how things are going to unfold and when Christ will actually come back to the earth. But thank the Lord, those of us that are saved, not going to be here during that time. Now, I know people that say we are, and that, by the way, is another one of those false teachings that comes from this chapter. When you get on down here to verse 24 through 27 in this chapter, it talks about the second advent of Jesus Christ, his return. Because people don't understand the context here, they teach that as the rapture. And since it says in verse 24, in those days after that tribulation, they say, see there, the church is going through the tribulation. Y'all following what I'm saying here? Well, that's clearly not a reference to the rapture. That's a reference to the advent, when Christ comes at the end of the tribulation. But if you don't understand that, then you start teaching people that the church is going through the tribulation. And then we'll see in another verse on down in this chapter that people who teach works for salvation use something in this passage to do so. They teach that a person's got to hang in there. You got to endure to the end. And if you don't hang in there and endure to the end, then you're not going to be saved. You'll lose your salvation somewhere along the way. And that's just more false teaching that comes from not understanding the context of this passage. So before we go any further in this study, I hope all of you in here understand that what we're studying about here, doctrinally speaking, has to do with the tribulation and not the church age. Now, as I said on Wednesday, it doesn't mean that we can't make some practical or devotional application from this for ourselves, because we can. But doctrinally speaking, you've got to be very careful when you start trying to apply it to where we are at this particular time. So keep that in mind as we go through this passage. We made it on Wednesday night down through verse 5. In the beginning of the chapter, Jesus and his disciples come out of the temple, and one of his disciples makes mention of the beauty of the temple and the building, the stones, and so forth. And Jesus tells them there in verse 2 that there's coming a day when there won't be one stone left upon another that shall be thrown down. We know that to be fulfilled historically in Titus in A.D. 70. But then it says, verse 3, and as he sat upon the Mount of Olives, and I told you Wednesday night, this is called the Olivet Discourse. That's what you call this. And it's simply called that because he's on the Mount of Olives when he says these words. But while he's sitting there, Peter, James, John, and Andrew ask him privately, tell us, when shall these things be, and what shall be the sign when all these things shall be fulfilled? And I took you back to Matthew 24, verse 3, where we see there that they ask also about signs for his coming and signs for the end of the world. So they're wanting to know, when is all of this going to happen? How are we going to know when all of this stuff is going to come to pass? And it is in answer to those questions that Jesus says the things that he does here. Verse 5, and Jesus answering them began to say, take heed lest any man deceive you. That's how he starts the whole thing out, with a warning to not let anybody deceive you. Now, if you want some devotional or practical application for us, what we have to be careful about is that we don't let anybody today deceive us about the content that is found here in this passage. We got to be careful that we don't buy into some of this erroneous doctrine, this false teaching that is coming out from this chapter here. We got to make sure we don't let any man, no matter who it is, deceive us along those lines. But for the context, this is for the people that will be during the tribulation. They need to watch out that nobody during that time deceives them. Deception is something that has been around ever since shortly after the fall of man. Any dispensation of time that you study about, you'll find there were deceivers. There were people there who deceived others. And this is something that is going on even now, and it's only going to increase and get worse with time. It was Paul who said to Timothy that evil men and seducers shall wax worse and worse, deceiving and being deceived. Now, did y'all hear that? He said they're going to wax worse and worse, so it's not going to get better. This thing of deception and people deceiving people about the truth is going to only get worse with time. And it's going to go beyond the church age out into the tribulation. Even during that time, there will be great deception, probably like never before in the history of the world. And it's just going to be a time of great deception, darkness, people being misled all over, just terrible things like never before. So Jesus starts out the thing by saying, take heed lest any man deceive you. You need to make sure that you don't get deceived. And then he follows that. If you'll notice, verse 5 ends with a colon. So the thought continues on into verse 6, and he explains why he issues this warning about deception. He says, for many, many shall come in my name, saying, I am Christ, and shall deceive many. Now, you see people do that occasionally now. In fact, I think I heard this past week about some fella professing to be Jesus or something like that. So you have that now. John says when you go over and read 1 John, you see that there are already deceivers and people in the world now that profess to be Christ. But when you get out into the tribulation, that's something that's going to ramp up even more. He says in the verse here, many, many shall come in my name, saying, I am Christ, and shall deceive many. So he says, take heed lest any man deceive you. Why do you need to take heed lest any man deceive you? Because there's a whole lot of people that's going to come in my name saying they're Christ and shall deceive many. A lot of people are going to buy into it. Somebody's going to show up and say, I'm Christ. And people are going to say, yeah, there he is. That's Jesus right there. That's the Christ. So this is something that's going to be prevalent, very prevalent during that time. Verse 7, and when, look at this now. He doesn't say an if, it's when. And when ye shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. Well, we do that now, right? We hear of wars. And there's rumors of wars. This thing here that's going on with North Korea and all that. Just constantly some war going on somewhere, whether it be on a smaller scale or a bigger scale. But there's some kind of conflict, some fighting going on somewhere all the time. And then there's the rumors of wars that we hear about. But that's even going to be during the tribulation period. He says, when ye shall hear of wars and rumors of wars, be ye not troubled. Those people that are here then, he's saying, y'all don't be troubled by what you hear. He says, for such things must needs be, but the end shall not be yet. Now that ought to show you, again, the context of this, the end. Back in Matthew 24:3, when his disciples asked him about the temple being destroyed, and then about the sign of his coming, they also go on to say in the end of the what? The world. Not the end of the church age. The end of the world. He's not talking here when he says the end about the end of the church age. He's talking about the end of the world as we know it. And he says there, verse 7, and when ye shall hear of wars and rumors of wars, be ye not troubled, for such things, look at it, must needs be, but the end shall not be yet. This thing really starts ramping up, and I keep saying that because that's really how I know to describe it best. Things are just going to, you have this stuff that we're reading right now in the world already, right? You have this. So it's not that when you get to the tribulation period, you're going to have stuff that hasn't already been. It's not that. It's that you're going to have it to an extent and a level like it never has been or ever shall be. It's just going to go to a whole other level during that time, a level like never before or ever shall be. So it's not that we don't hear about wars and rumors of wars now. We do, right? We do. But it's going to be to a greater extent during the tribulation period. Verse 8, for nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. And there shall be earthquakes in divers places. Well, do we have earthquakes now? Yes, we do. But it's going to be more often. When you get into this time we're talking about, it's not like we'll have never had an earthquake, because we've had thousands of them, thousands and thousands of them throughout the history of the world. But they're going to become more prevalent, and during that time, there's going to be more of them. And not only would they be more, but they're going to be more catastrophic than they ever have been. Do y'all remember from our studying in the book of Revelation how often we came across references to a great earthquake that's going to take place during the tribulation? Do y'all remember that? And it's an earthquake that is going to literally, to some extent, change the whole structure of the planet. I mean, it's going to be an awful earthquake like never has been. So it's not that we don't have earthquakes. We have them, but during that time, they're going to be more prevalent and they're going to be more catastrophic than they have in the past. There shall be earthquakes in divers. Divers is like diverse, different, diverse places. They'll be all over. You'll be having them, they'll just be showing up all over the place. And there shall be famines and troubles. Well, we got famines now, right? Got troubles now. So again, it's not, the tribulation doesn't necessarily usher in things that never have been. They just go to a whole other level during that time. And there will be, based on what you read in Revelation, some things showing up on the earth that we haven't seen before. And again, thank the Lord, we're not going to be here for that, but the people that are here are going to see some things. There's going to be some stuff that comes up out of the bottomless pit during that time that folks on the earth hadn't ever seen before. And so there will be some stuff, but a lot of this stuff is going to be what we're seeing now, just to a greater extent. Let's look at what he says in verse 8. These are the beginnings of sorrows. He says, you start seeing all these earthquakes, famines, and troubles, and it starts getting worse and worse. Just know the end's not yet. When you start hearing about wars and rumors of war, you see kingdoms rising against kingdom, know that the end isn't yet, but things are setting in motion, heading in that direction, getting worse and worse. When you start seeing this stuff, know that's the beginning of the end, in other words. This is the beginning of sorrows, and this is what's going to go on until the end. Verse 9, but take heed to yourselves. And he's talking here to a group of Jewish people. And most of what you read during this in this passage here that has to do with the tribulation is for Jewish people. It's a Jewish audience primarily that he's talking to. In the Old Testament, what does the Bible call the tribulation in one place? It's the time of Jacob's trouble. It's not the time of the church's trouble, thank God. It's the time of Jacob's trouble. So he's talking primarily to a Jewish audience and what these people are going to be seeing going on in the world around them and even things that's going to affect them personally. And we'll see that here in just a moment. Look here at verse 9. But take heed to yourselves, for they shall deliver you up to councils and in the synagogues. Well, synagogue, that's a Jewish thing, right? The synagogue. You'll see that. And in the synagogue shall be beaten. Us folk here today, we don't go to a synagogue. Now, we, you know, spiritualize passages in the Bible when we read it and it says something about Jesus or somebody being in a synagogue. We spiritualize that and apply that. We'll say we come to the synagogue. But technically, I mean, if you just want to get technical about it, this ain't no synagogue here. Y'all understand that? This is a church building, is what it is. It was built so that saved people could come together and meet and worship and study the Bible. These synagogues he's talking about here and the ones you read about in the Bible are real, literal synagogues where these Orthodox Jews, these Jewish people, come together. And he says during this time, they're going to deliver you up to councils, and in the synagogues ye shall be beaten. Jews are going to have a rough time during the tribulation. Jacob's trouble, it's going to be rough for him. The world as a whole, for the most part, is going to turn against him. Yes, sir. Well, the ones that he's referring to at this point, I believe, will be part of that remnant during the tribulation that upsaved people. He's out in prophetic stuff here and what's going to happen, talking about the generation that'll be during that time. But he's talking to his disciples, so yes, these guys in. Yeah, he's talking to a Jewish audience. Well, I think you can apply what he says here some to historical things. Like some of this stuff has already happened to some of these Jews, but prophetically you're going to go on out beyond this generation specifically that he's talking to the generation that'll be here during that time, and it'll have application to them. It's like so many scriptures that you read in the Bible that are prophecy. They have a historical application that's already been fulfilled, but they also carry with it a prophetic application that extends to another period of time. And historically, a lot of this stuff happened to these disciples. A lot of these disciples were persecuted, beaten, some of them killed, that sort of thing. But prophetically, it's going to be to the group of Jews during that time. And I believe it will be saved Jews, because he talked here about them having this happen for his sake. After the rapture, there will be people during the tribulation period who get saved. There'll be Jews and Gentiles. According to Revelation chapter 7, a multitude of Gentiles that no man could number. From every tribe and tongue and kindred and so forth, they come out of great tribulation. But then also we know about the Jews. That remnant of Jews that will be saved during that time as well. So, anyways, Did I thoroughly confuse you? Did I help you out there? Thoroughly confuse you? Well, if I thoroughly confused you, I did my job, didn't I? Verse 9 again, but take heed to yourselves, for they shall deliver you up to councils and the synagogues. You shall be beaten, and you shall be brought before rulers and kings for my sake. So it's obviously referencing a group of people that have acknowledged Jesus Christ, a group of Jews that have acknowledged Jesus Christ as their Messiah here. And that will be the case with Jews during that time. For my sake, for a testimony against them. They're going to give testimony themselves, and then it's a testimony against them in the sense that God is watching how those people will treat those Jews. And they, when they meet their judgment and stand before the Lord, they'll be held accountable for how they treated these Jews. Just like in any period of time that you talk about, God pays attention to how folks treat his people. It doesn't matter if you're talking about Old Testament times or right now where we are. Which is so important, and I think one of the things that people downplay often whenever we have an election is how a candidate says they feel about Israel. We tend to put the emphasis more on moral things, which all that's important, you know, the homosexuality and abortion and all that, but in my opinion, what is of greater importance than any of that, it's where a man stands with Israel. Because if a man is against Israel, then God's against that man. And if he takes that country or whatever, any form of government in a direction against Israel, he is taking them to the judgment of God is what he's doing. So that is a thing that I believe needs to be thought about more than anything else. But people today, you know, it's all about how is he going to affect me financially and all this other nonsense. Which the fact of the matter is, God's not going to bless a country financially. He's not going to bless a person, a people financially. We want all our economy and all this stuff straightened out. God's not going to pour out his blessing on all that if we're all messed up spiritually. What people don't understand is that the blessing of God is tied to the spiritual condition of a people and a country and where they stand with Israel. He said, those that bless Israel, I will bless. Those that curse them, I'll curse. And these people during this time that are beating these Jews and are mistreating them, God's watching that. Just like he's watching right now. Just like he watched in the past. And what they do here is a testimony against them. When they stand before God, they'll be held accountable for how they treated that Jew. Verse 10, and the gospel must first be published among all nations. Matthew chapter 24, y'all can write this down if you'd like to. Matthew 24, verse 14. Same context, just Matthew's account of this Olivet Discourse. Matthew calls it the gospel of the kingdom. If you have a Scofield reference Bible, I don't know how many of you use a Scofield, I know a few people do. You'll notice that Scofield has a note on He makes a distinction between the gospel of the grace of God that Paul preaches and that we are to be preaching during the church age versus what Jesus calls the gospel of the kingdom. Scofield makes a distinction between that and says it's a different type of gospel. But the word gospel itself means good news. We got good news now, right? Christ died for our sins, was buried, and rose again. If we'll trust him, we can go to heaven. Thank the Lord for that gospel. There'll be good news for the people then, just like there's good news for us. In every period of time, God has made a way for people that want to be saved to be saved, in every period of time. And the tribulation will be no different. If a person wants to be saved during that time, they'll be saved. There'll be good news for them. There'll be news there that if they'll listen to that and believe that, they'll get saved. But if they don't, they won't. And the gospel must first be published among all nations. That is before the end, which is what Jesus says back in Matthew 24. Then shall the end be. Once the gospel is published, yes, sir. Yes. That is another, yeah, absolutely. I've heard that many times. Even growing up as a kid, I can remember being taught that we're waiting we're waiting for the gospel to go to all nations, and until that happens, Jesus is not coming. And that's one of those things I was referencing a while ago when I talked about signs that people are still looking for, and why some people preach right now that Jesus can't come, that we can't have the rapture, because the gospel technically hasn't gone into all nations yet. Which now, I mean, good gracious, with all the technology and stuff that we have, I don't know how it hadn't gone into all nations. It may have, but they're saying that he can't come until that time, which again is, this is in the context of the gospel of the kingdom being preached to all nations during the tribulation, and then the end will come. Let's just look back at that real quick. I think it's important that we see it. If you go back here to Matthew 24, where I was talking about, you see it again. The verse that I gave you to write down, Matthew 24:14. And that expression, the end, the end, the end, the end, shows up all the way through the Olivet Discourse. And it's never used in reference to the end of the church age, ever. The context is set back in Matthew 24:3, where it says, "And as he sat upon the Mount of Olives, the disciples came unto him privately, saying, Tell us, when shall these things be, and what shall be the sign of thy coming, and of the end of the world?" They're not asking about the end of the church age. They're asking about the end of the world. So when you have that thing, the end, the end, the end, all the way through there, you've got to pay attention to that. The context is verse 3, not the end of the church age, but the end of the world. And he says in verse 14 in this chapter, "And this gospel of the kingdom," which is the gospel Jesus preached, if you pay attention, John the Baptist and Jesus Christ, you know what they said all the time when they came? When they came preaching the gospel, the good news, they always said, "The kingdom of God is at hand. The kingdom of God is at hand." They preached the gospel then of the kingdom. That gospel is going to be preached during the tribulation. Verse 14, "This gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations." Look at it. "And then shall the end come." Then shall the end come. The end of what? Verse 3. The end of the world. Y'all see that? I don't want to confuse you. I hope I'm not confused. I'm not trying to confuse you. But you got to make sure that you understand what's being talked about here. It's talking about the end of the world as we know it, not the end of the church age. So we're not having to wait. This idea that the gospel's got to be preached to all nations before the rapture, that's not right. That's not right. He can show up right now. Wouldn't it be a blessing if he did? Just show up right now. He can. But this is about the gospel of the kingdom being preached to all nations during the tribulation. Well, we're about out of time. We'll just stop here before we go on into verse number 11. Any questions about what we looked at here today?